truth is that? The same you were shouting that morning when you came back from the dead? Unfounded accusations wholly without proof, the rantings of a man driven out of his wits by long captivity and torture? You may choose to call those ravings truth, but I am king here, and these men follow me. On these islands, mine is the only truth that counts.
Maven drew a deep breath. Thor's hammer, his wrists felt as if naked flames licked at them.
So, you expect our people to follow a man who murdered his own brother?
He asked.
It seems to me you have let nothing and no one stand in the path that leads to your desires. I'm not sure you understand what you have done.
If you want to explain it to me, please go ahead, Eivind. I'm here to listen.
On one count, you are right.
Eivind's fists clenched, tight. The shaking was getting worse.
I did swear loyalty to you once, and I meant it. I've never forgotten that you saved my life. From the first, I recognized in you what others could not see. Courage, determination, fierce strength of will. A cleverness I could never come close to. A desire to be your own master and set your own course. I admired that in you. I saw a future in which those qualities would flower, a time in which you would set them to some great and noble purpose.
A light had awoken in Somerled's dark eyes.
Now is that time,
he exclaimed, springing to his feet and setting a hand on Eivind's shoulder.
Can't you see that? We are here together, and I am king, and we have a whole new world to make as we will. These people look up to me, Eivind. They like a leader who's prepared to make hard decisions and to abide by them. They want someone who will adhere to the old gods. They don't want some vacillating peacemonger with his head in the clouds. They want direction. I've given them that. They're grateful. They'll do anything for me. Look at your fellow wolfskins lurking out there in the hallway. They're more loyal to me than they ever were to Ulf. I've given them real work to do, the only kind they understand.
A kingdom founded on a brother's blood is not much of a kingdom,
Eivind said quietly.
A battle fought on such uneven terms as yours against King Angus can bring no glory, only shame.
Somerled's eyes narrowed.
Are you telling me you would break your blood oath? That now, in the light of day, after time for reflection, after weighing the consequences, you would still stand against me, Eivind?
I don't think that's what I'm saying at all. It seems to me my blood oath ties me to guide your steps in right paths. It forces me to tell you when you are wrong, to make sure you don't do any more damage to yourself or to others. What crime did Ulf ever commit to bring down such doom on himself?
Somerled's lips tightened.
You are more brother to me than he ever was, he said. And yet you turn against me. In your efforts to destroy me, you will only destroy yourself. You said I didn't understand what this meant, but you're the one who doesn't understand.
Maybe not. He always called me stupid, muddled. Perhaps it's true. All I can tell you is that if you continue to follow this path of slaughter, destruction, and fear, I will fight you to the end, blood oath or no. Good folk have perished here, folk who were slain for no reason, save that you wanted what was theirs. A treaty was broken. The rules of right engagement callously disregarded.
There was a pause. Somerled's fingers toyed with an ale cup, rolling it against the tabletop.
And the girl died, he said eventually. That's what this is all about, isn't it?
What girl?
Even to himself, Eivind's voice sounded strained.
The princess. The little priestess. Angus's niece. That was a pity. I liked her. And I suspect you did, too. Weren't you hiding in that place where the island witches brewed their potions? I suppose you fell for her, though I did think your tastes ran more to the buxom fair type. But there can be no other explanation for your sudden insanity.
She could never have been for you, old friend.
She was far above you, a bride for royalty. Well, that's of no account now. She's gone. Never mind, there are several others to choose from, though the best we captured are already taken. I'll give you first pick of what's left.
Fury quickened Avon's breathing. With difficulty, he held his features calm.
I don't want a woman, he said.
What do you want, Avent? Why have you allowed yourself to be brought back here? Tell me.
Avent swallowed.
A fair hearing, that's all. Let me put forward the truth as I know it. Call witnesses, present evidence before a thing, whatever assembly you wish to convene. Give me the usual time to prepare my case. I will accept the judgment of worthy men.
You prepare a case? Oh, dear, Avent. This time on the run has really addled your wits.
It is possible, Avent said, that truth may outweigh the cleverest arguments. I may be muddled and stupid, but I understand that. Are you afraid of the truth?
Of course not, someone had snapped.
I'm afraid of having to pass judgment on you, my oldest of friends.
You're such a fool, you haven't worked that out even now.
Avent, I know you as well as anyone does.
You just don't have the capacity to win this. I have my own rules here, new ones. I don't convene assemblies, I hear all cases myself. Judgments are summary and swift. That's essential to maintain discipline. I've called you in here because it's the only way I can save you. You disobeyed a direct order.
You made wild accusations. You fought against your fellow warriors.
If those charges are brought against you formally and proven, I can only pronounce a sentence of death. It would be carried out within a day.
Death?
This was new indeed. In the formal hearings of Rogaland, a lifetime's banishment was the harshest penalty a man might receive. Of course, unofficial executions by fire or ambush were possible, but these attracted their own penalty. Such feuds could last for generations.
It's indeed so. I have decreed it. Necessary in these times of instability. I can't afford any insubordination, any half-baked rebellions.
Now, Avent, what's it to be?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Avent rose to his feet and instantly regretted it. After the day's forced march, the old weakness had returned to his legs, and he had to set a hand on the table for support.
I'm offering you a chance to redeem yourself. More than offering, I'm begging you to take it.
Somerled was pale. His eyes were deadly serious.
Let there be no more talk of Ulf and of murders. Let there be no more talk of Angus, of the battles we have won here, of treaties and the like.
You cannot make the dead live again, Avent. Come back to my side. Let us go forward as we planned once, long ago, a great king and his peerless wolfskin.
Your behavior can be easily explained, readily forgiven once the full tale is told, of how these islanders took you prisoner after Ramsbeck and played tricks with your head so that you could no longer tell friend from foe, right from wrong. You're still clearly very weak in body as well as mind. Why else would the foremost of my warriors give himself up so easily?
You can have rest, good care, as many little islander girls as you want to warm your bed.
No need for any sort of hearing. I'll announce that I've pardoned your indiscretion, and we'll move on from there. What do you say?
Avent was silent. In his mind he saw Nessa, a slight, graceful figure walking on the shore, turning her head to look at him, her long brown hair tossed like a banner in the west wind. He saw a young warrior's severed head, fierce-eyed. He saw Ulf's tortured body hanging in air. He wondered how Somerled would kill him when the time came.
Avent, don't make me do this. I beg you.
Somerled's voice was shaking. It was the voice of a child who had once said nobody cared.
I want a fair hearing, said Avent quietly. If you will not call an assembly, then let me tell the truth as I know it before all the folk of this settlement. Then, since you've appointed yourself as sole arbiter, I suppose you will pronounce sentence on me. But I will be heard. I would like my brother to be present, if it can be called back from Hafnarfjarðar. I would like Lady Margaret to hear what I have to say.
It's not up to you to determine who should be there, Somerled snapped. Odin's bones, Eivind, you're such a fool. Why sacrifice yourself for nothing, cursed man? I can't do without you.
Eivind managed to smile.
I think, for both of us, there is now no way forward but this, he said. You cannot undo what you have wrought here. Even if you stepped on your ship tomorrow and set sail home to Freyrsfjord, the legacy of your deeds would shadow this place for long years to come. For you have robbed these folk of a whole generation of men. As for me, I can see no other way than to set things out as I understand them, and call on the gods and on the wisdom of ordinary folk to make wrongs right again. That is all I can say, Somerled, except that I am sorry. Sorry that it has come to this between us.
Please, said Somerled in a whisper.
Please don't do this. You don't know what you're throwing away.
The little image of Nessa came again, tiny and perfect, her grave features, her graceful hands putting a pattern of white stones in place, her dark hair shining in lamplight.
I do know, Eivind said quietly. I know how high the stakes are. And I know I must play to the end.
Chapter 12. Gard was slow, so slow. A brave dog and loyal, he did his best to keep up with her, staggering along behind, his long legs shaky at best. Nessa stopped 3 times on her journey so that he could rest, once by a stream where the hound lapped thirstily, once by the burned-out ruin of a cottage. She shrank to think what had become of the fisherman and his family who had lived there as long as she could remember. And later, in the shade of bushes as they neared the cliffs above the place she sought. She gritted her teeth in frustration each time. Poor Gard. Somerled's henchmen had struck him insensible. It was not fair to expect so much of him. He struggled to maintain even a walking pace, and there was no time at all to spare. The women of the folk had been taken, and now Eivind was captive, at Somerled's mercy. She had seen what this new king could do. The sun passed across the sky. It seemed to Nessa the day moved on with cruel and unreasonable speed. Her burdens were heavy, the bag with its strange cargo gleaned from a chieftain's barrow, and under her other arm the wolfskin, rolled tightly and bound with a strip of linen torn from her shift. She would not leave this great, shimmering pelt behind, impractical though carrying it had proved. She had already allowed Eivind to sacrifice himself for her, not once but twice. It was clear to Nessa that the skin was part of him, as integral to his self as steadfast heart or loyal spirit. The wolfskin must be kept safe. Thus, she reasoned, she might in some way protect him until the truth was at last laid out for all to see and understand. All the same, she chafed at every small delay, and as she passed through hidden vales and over gentle hills toward the sea, her mind was beset by images of what might be. Eivind imprisoned, Eivind beaten, Eivind desperately playing for time so that she might be safe. He was in terrible danger. A man who would slaughter and burn as Somerled had would not hesitate to wipe another from the face of the earth if he believed him a threat. Friendship meant nothing to such a man. Nessa shivered as she stood on the edge of the cliffs above the hidden cove. Let him live. She sent a prayer to whatever god might be listening. Thor, perhaps, for surely this warfather would not abandon so patently heroic a warrior, whatever Eivind himself believed. If the god had fallen silent, it was for a reason, perhaps so that his son might listen to his own heart a while, and make his choices in another way. Keep him safe, until I have made what must be made, and journeyed back to find him. She expected no answer, and there was none. She must simply get on with this. The way down to the cove was steep and narrow. She bore her burdens carefully, picking cautious steps on the slippery cliff path. Far below her, the ocean rolled dark and chilled the shore, and all the way down birds screamed, gliding and diving in endless dance about the ledges and crevices of the rock face. Nessa had no free hand to protect her eyes, nor could she shut them as beak or claws flashed past a handspan from her face. It would be thus all through the nesting season. Guard faltered after her, edging his way down the precarious track. At last they reached the foot of the cliff, where a small stretch of sand lay before shallow caves, and shelves of flagstone spread out on either side, offering a safe haul up for seals, and a fine spot for line fishing when wind and tide allowed. There were no fishermen here today. Perhaps there were none left at all. She had passed several cottages whose roofs were burned and whose stock wandered untended. Once she had thought she saw the body of a man lying sprawled in a yard. Once she had heard a dog howling. She had not ventured closer. How many of Engus's people survived here on the home island? Did Somerled seek to crush every last one of them, to wipe out all trace of the folk, so that even in the tales of future generations, the knowledge of them would be lost? She was here at last. Now she must work quickly to finish the making. Afterward, there was another hurdle to cross, but she would not consider that yet. Nessa glanced at the sun. It was already sinking toward the west. If she made this tonight and traveled tomorrow, would she be there in time? How long could Eivind hold out? He had been a prisoner since dawn, nearly a whole day. He might already be dead. Her fingers reached to untie the wolfskin and spread it out on the floor of the small cave. It was indeed a wondrous and powerful thing, whose magic could be sensed in every strand of its glossy surface. "Wait for me," Nessa whispered. "Don't go on without me." The task could not be completed without help. She knew that. It was the purpose of her journey here. Nessa unfastened the bag and emptied its burden out. With a faint, clinking music, the bones tumbled moon-white onto the silver-gray wolf pelt. A tangle of dark hair wrapped itself around them. She stared down at the jumble of shapes, biting her lip. It was only an old tale, after all, voice of truth in harp of bone. She believed it, of course she did. The only thing was, the stories never gave step-by-step advice as to how one might go about constructing the mysterious objects of which they told. Practically speaking, it was impossible. The frame could not be locked together. What might one use in place of pegs of wood or whalebone? How might one shape the curves with only a small knife and so little time? And what about the strings? A man's hair could not provide the tension required to sound notes in a melody. It would snap the moment the pegs were tightened. Still, she had no choice. Such doubts must be set aside. Truth was the most powerful voice of all. Truth would make itself heard against impossible odds. And for such a work of magic, Nessa must seek help from those who understood the deepest secrets of the heart and of the blood. Those whose existence was part of the ebb and flow of the tide itself. She settled herself on the flat stones above the dark water. She cast her mind back a long time, to a day when small Nessa had been watching the seals on the shore and thinking about the lonely fisherman who had built the tower in the earth. "Runa," she'd asked, "how could you call the seal tribe? If you wanted to talk to them, how could you make them hear you?" "That depends," Runa had replied guardedly. "Such folk don't just come when you want them. They're not at the beck and call of the humankind, and they never will be."
"So you've never..."
"Ah," Runa had answered. "I didn't say that. For you and me, it's a bit different. You'll find out as you study the mysteries. They start to hear you and recognize what you are,
And then you begin to hear them. These old ones, the sea people, the earth folk, they understand our part is to preserve the heart of the islands, Nessa. We all want that. One day you'll be casting your circle, and you'll look westward to invoke the powers of the ocean, and the people of the seal tribe will be there watching you. And there is a way to call them, if you've a desperate need. What way?
At 9 years old, Nessa had not been sure of what a desperate need might be. But she was always eager to learn whatever the wise woman had to tell.
You must sit by the water in a place you know they love, and you must shed 7 tears into the sea. Then ask them to help you.
Does it work?
I don't know, Rona said dryly. Let's hope we never have to put it to the test.
The time had come now. 7 tears, no more, no less. It was not hard to weep. Think not of the deaths of her uncle and Kinnard, and all the fine men of the folk. Not of the kinstone laid low. Not of her mother's slow fading, and the fever that had snatched her sisters away before she could say goodbye. Think not of the women of the whaleback, captive and frightened. Think not of Rona, wandering off into the wilderness alone, so that Eivind might go on to confront the friend who was his enemy. Think not of Eivind giving himself up so Nessa would be safe, nor of what he might be enduring now. Oh no. Think only of last night. Think of the look on his face, his smile like a flash of sunshine, the touch of his hands on her body. So gentle, so careful for all the passion that made his breathing falter and his blue eyes darken. Think of the way their bodies moved together, as if they were two halves of one wondrous whole. Remember the secret darkness of their longing and the shattering brightness of their fulfillment. Even now her body ached with it. Think only of the unthinkable sweetness of that, and of how much she had to lose if she failed. Think of that and weep. 1, 2, 3, 7. Now cover the eyes with sudden hands, lest a whole flood of tears drop into the cold sea, and this charm be undone before it was ever made. She sat silent thus, palms over her face, head bowed, with no room in her thoughts for anything but him. Yet all around her the magic flowed, ancient and true. For this was not just for woman and man, for the bond between them. It was for the folk, for the islands, for life itself. Seated there, blind and weeping, Nessa felt the power of it deep in the bone, flooding the heart, filling the spirit with brightness. And she knew she had never been more priestess than she was in this moment. She opened her eyes to guards barking. There were 5 of them seated on the rocks around her, women, and yet not women. Fragile, wild sea creatures with eyes all liquid darkness, and hair draping their white shoulders like fronded leaves, grey, blue, green, as the deep below the swell. Their bodies were naked and wet, pale skin pearled with droplets, as if they had but a moment ago emerged from the ocean's chill embrace. Perhaps what lay on the sandy beach beyond them was merely a drift of dark weed. Perhaps it was sealskin set neatly down until their owners would need them again. Guard was hysterical, running up and down the shore, squandering the last of his flagging strength in a frantic warning.
"Hush now, Guard. Good boy."
Nessa rose and walked back to the little cave, and they followed on their narrow white feet. They settled in a circle around the wolfskin, and long-fingered hands reached out immediately to touch the bones, to stroke and examine. They seemed to speak one to another, but their voices made notes, not words. A deep, antiphonal humming that told their understanding of what Nessa had prepared here. With pointed finger, with nod or shrug, with little notes of song, they proceeded to show her how the task must be done. Shreds of dark matter adhered to the bones, near the joints. These must be cleaned away, and the long, pale shafts polished. A handful of sand, shreds of dry seaweed, she must rub harder, harder. This was to be a thing of beauty, pure and bright as the moon itself. This took time. As each bone was judged ready, it was laid out in place, flat on the wolf pelt, so the shape of what must be made could be seen. Shin bones, thigh bones for the frame, these must be trimmed, pared, shaped with Ness's little knife. Once or twice the sea women were not satisfied with her efforts. They would not use the knife, but took up the bones and set their teeth to them with precision, gnawing a hollow, grinding a curve more precisely. The joints must be a perfect fit, matching as sweetly as the timbers of that great vessel that had borne Ulf, the Farseeker, safe across the ocean to the islands of his destiny. They watched her intently, shining eyes fixed on every fumbling attempt to hold the sliding pieces in place, attention sharp on every cautious shaving away of a tiny shard so that the instrument would be perfect in form and function. Later they chewed weed into long strips for bindings, passing her the dark, wet strands, showing her cunning knots, clever twists. These wrappings would tighten as they dried, giving strength to the frame. The day passed swiftly. The sun bathed the small patch of western shore in deep gold, lighting the faces of Ness's companions to a translucent glow. A note of urgency had crept into their voices now, the pattern of their speech-song conveying a clear message. Hurry! The sun moves lower. Make haste or it will be too late. Pegs. Little pegs of finger bone, notches almost too small to see. So small her hands were shaking. She must concentrate. She must slow down. She must keep her mind only on the task of making, and put those other images out of her mind. Eivind hurt, Eivind fighting and falling again. There must be time, she murmured to herself. I'll light a fire. I'll work all night. In the morning I'll find a horse at one of the farms. I'll ride there as swiftly as I can. He's only been captive one day. They must have some sort of hearing. These things take time. Tomorrow. Tomorrow must be soon enough. Even as she spoke, she saw the look in the sea women's wide eyes, and heard the tone of their wordless voices, and recognized what they were trying to tell her. One raised a delicate hand, gesturing toward the sun, and ululated a warning. Another pointed to the cliff path, to Ness herself, and to Gard, who now slept with eyes half open at the rear of the shallow cave, twitching and trembling. The sea woman used her hands to show running, running. She pointed eastward, her hum rising to a kind of scream, which rang from her mouth and nose, a braying danger call like the voice of a war trumpet. There was no mistaking the message. Finish it and go now. Now. Tomorrow is too late. They began to work alongside her. It seemed they had decided she could not finish in time, not on her own. Their thin, pale fingers plucked the hair from the tumble of discarded bone and began to twist and weave it together with a speed and dexterity that made Ness stare in wonderment, until one hissed at her, motioning to the harp frame, where the small holes still lacked their pegs. These finger bones were so little, and it was getting dark. She made the holes as neatly as she could, not easy with a knife better suited to the casting of ritual circles than such a delicate and precise task. She fitted one peg, working hard to keep her hands steady as the sky darkened and the sun turned red, sinking until it was a finger breadth above the slate grey of the western sea. She eased another into place. I must make a fire, she said, hoping they might understand. I can't see to do such fine work. It's almost dark, and there are four more of these to fit, and then the strings. Must I go there by night? Is that what you mean? The only answer was wordless, incomprehensible. One of the sea women held the frame upright. Two others were still fashioning strings, and there were two down on the sand now, crouching over something they were making. Nessa fitted the next peg. You should tell me the truth, she said, fumbling to find another of the tiny bones, to trim the end narrower while she could still see. If I don't get there before morning, will Eivind die? How can I get there? How can I go up this path in the dark with... She looked at the thing she had made, so delicate, so fragile. She looked at the wolfskin, bulky, heavy, but not to be left behind. Gard whimpered in his sleep. He was exhausted and hurt.
I don't think I can do it,
Nessa whispered.
Oh, Evie, how can I do it?
She reached to slip the peg into place, but it was too wide and would not fit, and now the sun sank abruptly, and all at once it was too dark to see, too dark to calculate the fine adjustment necessary, to shave off the smallest fragment of bone so this could fit snugly but still be turned.
I can't do it.
The sea woman suddenly let go of the harp, and Nessa's hands shot out to keep it from falling. A thrill ran through her, a ripple of power that made every corner of her body tingle with a terrible awareness. In that moment, she felt what this was. As yet, it had no strings, no voice, yet she sensed the magic hidden in the graceful frame, the energy concealed in the elegant small shape. I am. I am. Its voice hovered on the edge of hearing, urgent to come forth. Oh, it would speak all right. It would tell a tale to freeze men's hearts and set tears of shame in their eyes. It would make them shiver and quail with its song. This harp would bring truth to the tyrant's hall. It would save the folk. It would save Eivind, if only she could bear it forth in time. There was a certain amount of dispute as to where Eivind might be held securely until all was prepared for a formal hearing. Erland and Holger recommended some form of shackles and a bolted door. Sommerled thought such precautions unnecessary. After all, Eivind had demanded a fair hearing. Now that he was getting one, why would he take the trouble to escape? Hadn't he given himself up with no more than a token struggle? A compromise was reached. Hobbles for the ankles, locked securely, but the hands left free, since the prisoner's wrists were red raw from the tight bonds he had worn during his march north. The chamber where they placed him seemed new. Eivind thought it purpose-built for captives such as himself, for the door was an iron grille, heavily bolted. There was a high, small window in the stone wall. None but Vole or Finch might escape this cell. A straw-filled sack and a bucket provided the sole furnishings. Guards paced the hallway beyond the door, not Grimm, not Holger, not Erland, but others, men who did not know their prisoner well. Perhaps someone had thought that safer, or maybe the Wolfskins did not like to see their old comrades sunk so low. He had seen the unease on their faces, the confusion in their eyes. Now he was not only a traitor, he was something worse, a coward. For Sommerled was right. As usual, Eivind would not attempt an escape. Though as soon they'd brought him in here, he had instinctively sized up door and bolts, and guards, to weigh the chances. For Wolfskin, this was a natural reaction, but he would not try, even though he suspected Sommerled's idea of what constituted a fair hearing would differ markedly from his own. If he broke out and fled, he would be pursued. Sommerled could not afford to have him abroad, spreading dangerous truths. And if they hunted for him, they would find Nessa. That could not be allowed to happen. He was not so much of a fool as to believe there could be a future in the Isles for him, even though she had lain in his arms one whole sweet night. She had a place here as priestess, as leader. As for himself, it seemed he had earned the scorn of all who had once admired and loved him. There was nothing to do but go on in the manner of a warrior, with what strength and dignity he could muster. He would face death as the wolf did, steadfast at the very moment of darkness. Time passed. The guard changed and changed again. Someone brought food and drink. Eivind wasn't hungry, but he ate it anyway, simply for something to do. The silence, the shadows sharpened his awareness of the pain in his wrists, the trembling in his hands, the weak, numb feeling in his legs. He made himself move about within the tight confines of the cell, bending, stretching, always hampered by the shackles. He tried to imagine what the hearing would be like, what Sommerled would say, and how a man such as himself might counter the arguments of such an expert law speaker. The light from outside suggested late afternoon or early evening. Eivind sat on his straw pallet, concentrating hard, making sure he could remember all the details of Ulf's death, and what had been said during that day on High Island. The blood, the dead eye, the knots. Somerled's voice, shrill with shock. He was jolted back to the present by a hoarse whisper from the door. Grim stood beyond the grill, flaxen hair, bristling beard, anxious eyes.
"Evened," he hissed. "Wake up, man."
Evened rose and moved forward. He said nothing.
"Listen,"
whispered Grim, mouth close to the narrow bars of the door.
"Shouldn't be here. Haven't got long. Might be able to get you out. You game for it?"
Evened could not help himself. His heart thumped. His blood surged with hope. A friend. Freedom. A chance to live. Gods, how he wanted that.
"How?"
he murmured.
"Supper time. Little diversion. One of us slips the bolt. End of the hallway. There's a yard. And a couple of old nags. Up to you, then. We keep them busy. Give you a fighting chance. Better than nothing. What do you say?" "I can't."
There was no choice. He had known that all along.
"What?" "I can't. I have to face him. Have to tell my side of the story. But thanks. I thought I had no friends left here."
Grim's eyes flicked one way and the other, watching for the returning guards.
"We don't think much of what you've done. That doesn't mean we want you dead." "Why not? Why not get away? You've about as much chance against him,"
he jerked his head in the general direction of the hall,
"as a naked babe against an armed warrior. None, that is. Better to die a free man, surely." "I can't. Someone has to tell the truth, and it looks as if I'm the only possibility." "Grim."
"What?"
"Where's Eric? I sent him a message a while ago. Why isn't he here?"
Grim scowled.
"I don't know. See nothing of the pair of them, him and Thord, since long before we took the whale back. Busy with the ship, I should think. Nearly time to sail. Still, this isn't like him. Evened."
Grim broke off as footsteps sounded along the hallway, the guards returning.
"You sure?"
he hissed. Evened nodded. Inexplicably, there seemed to be tears in his eyes, and he turned away so his old comrade could not see the sign of weakness. He had to be strong. Strong, clever, and calm, like Somerled. The arguments, the facts, he would go over them once more, make sure he would be able to relate them clearly, even with Somerled looking right at him, ready to pounce on any flaws. He sat down again on the straw pallet and tried to concentrate, but his mind seemed to have stopped cooperating. The images he saw in the shadowy cell were not of the voyage to High Island, the climb, the mist, the desperate search and sickening discovery. Instead, he saw the forest above Hammersby, and two boys walking along a narrow path under tall firs. They went soft-footed, knives and spears ready for the hunt, moving together in a silence of complete understanding. One felt pride. "He's good at this now, and I taught him." What the other felt, there was no telling. He saw them younger, in the red light of a winter dawn on the frozen lake, one unsteady on his new skates, the other supporting with kind words and strong arms. He saw himself with crudely splintered leg, face white as chalk, staggering down the rocky hillside, and a small, fierce-eyed Somerled struggling to keep him upright. The grim jaw, the scowling determination of that exhausted child, set him apart. Surely, Evened thought, such single-minded courage had destined Somerled for greatness. And he had indeed become a king, just as the seer had foretold. But this travesty based on murder, cruelty and lies, this mockery of a true monarch's rule, surely it was not this the Catwoman had spoken of. Even he, stupid, muddled Evened, whose only skill was with sword and axe, could have done a better job as leader here. For all his cleverness, Somerled had got everything wrong. They must be made to see that. He would make them see it. Evened lay down and closed his eyes. Without rest, he had no hope of keeping his wits about him when the time came. Sleep safely, bright star. my hand in yours.
Sometime in the darkness, Eivind was woken by voices and the flare of torches and the sound of bolts being scraped open. It seemed to be time to move. Erland and Holger conveyed him out into the hall, his feet still hobbled. Neither said a word, nor did they lay hands on him this time, but walked on either side as if uncertain which they were, warders or bodyguards. The hall was alive with lamplight and movement, and the buzz of anticipatory voices. They ushered Eivind to the center, facing the table at which Somerled sat, flanked by the men who had been his brother's advisers, and by some who had been elevated by the new chieftain's favor. The captain of the Knarr was there, the Knarr on which a man called Firehead had died. On every side of the long chamber, men sat on benches or stood in small groups, talking among themselves. The place was packed as full as a temple at the time of sacrifice. No white goat this time, only a man. Eivind's thoughts spun in a way he much disliked, but could not halt. And Somerled has learned to use the knife. I taught him myself. He blinked and straightened his shoulders. There must be no sign of weakness. Keep still, stand upright, set a guard on eyes and tongue that they betray no secrets. Tell no more than was strictly necessary. The hum of voices ceased. Somerled had risen to his feet. He wore a little circlet of finely wrought silver in place of his customary neat hairband. He appeared quite pale, very serious, and every bit a king.
"I call this assembly to order," he said gravely, not raising his voice. "The matters we must deal with tonight are dark and troubling. They touch on the very safety and security of our settlements on this shore. Our enemy works subtly. He seeks to undermine us by turning our most loyal servants and comrades to traitors, our dearest friends to enemies. Do not think that the great victory we achieved at the Whaleback was the end of this struggle. Oh, no. The fight goes on in the hidden crevices and corners of this land, in the dark caves and sinister places of the earth, on the far-flung islands. The evil works subtly. It is under our very noses, in front of our very eyes, before we see it in its true colors.
Somerled sighed, his dark gaze intent on Eivind.
That is why this hearing has been called without delay. I will not lie to you. You know this man has been my closest friend since childhood, dearer than a brother, sworn to me by blood. You know the pain I feel in pursuing this. I did indeed speak with him, offer help, seeing, as he could not see, the poison our enemy had slipped into his mind. But Eivind would have none of it. It was he who demanded the formal hearing I conduct tonight. And perhaps he was right to do so. These charges are of the gravest kind, and if we find him guilty, the penalty will match them in severity. You all know what that means."
There was a slight shuffling of feet, a fidgeting around the hall. Grimm stood by the western door. Eivind saw his ferocious scowl. Where was Eirik? Where was Margaret?
"So, we shall commence. I will set forth the charges. Eivind will have his turn to speak. Decision and penalty will be pronounced tonight, and the sentence carried out at dawn tomorrow. Such affairs unsettle us all. They stand in the way of our plans and endeavors, and cast a shadow on the fair fields of our conquest. I cannot have this. I want this over quickly, over and done with."
Men muttered among themselves again. It seemed to Eivind to have the sound of agreement. Were there no friends here? Nobody who would listen? Had Somerled convinced them all before this had even begun?
"Very well, Eivind."
The tone had changed now. It was a silky, deceptively soft voice, one Eivind had heard before in a court of law, deliciously anticipatory, like the sound in the throat of a cat before it moves to take the prey.
"The facts are thus. You led your men forward at Ramsbeck with a courage nobody disputes."
It was an expert account.
Somerled had held the audience in the palm of his hand as he set out the tale of his wolfskin's disappearance, his own grief and fury at Avon's apparent demise at the hands of King Angus and his warriors. Then there was the ghostly sighting at the lair of the island witches, when he sent his men out to capture Angus's niece. The girl was a sorceress, and had needed to be stopped before she employed her dark arts against his own forces. As he spoke, Somerled had moved out from behind the table and paced to and fro, sometimes behind Avond, sometimes before him. Avond noticed how this king looked each man in the eye as he passed, as if speaking directly to him. It was unnerving. He set his own gaze forward, fixing on a particular point in the stone wall above the heads of the intently listening arbiters. Soon he himself must speak. He must try to set his case out clearly, weary as he was. He must keep this going. He must not give in. The longer the hearing lasted, the more time he bought for Nessa.
"Then he came back," Somerled was saying. "In the flesh this time. Odin's bones, I've never felt such joy as I did at that moment, seeing my old friend alive, though a mere shadow of himself. We were poised on the brink of our great victory. I needed no more than my wolfskin's presence to make that day perfect. I sent him forward to take his place among the others in the vanguard, for despite his obvious weakness, he seemed hungry for it. And then..."
Somerled's voice faltered. He looked down at his hands folded before him.
"And then... it pains me to put into words what all of you know already. Erland, lad, stand forward and tell this assembly what happened at dawn at the Whaleback."
Erland cleared his throat. He was a man of few words. A wolfskin's realm was the field of battle, the prow of the longship, not an assembly of law, if such a title could be given to this makeshift proceeding.
"My lord, and all gathered here, I can only say what we all saw that morning. Avon's return gladdened our hearts. It seemed a bright omen that he had come back to us on that particular day, at that particular time. It had Thor's mark on it. I did think Avon somewhat changed, ill perhaps, and weakened from so long living wild. We did not know where he had been, and he told us he had forgotten. Then, at the moment of advance, he..." "Take your time," said Somerled kindly. "He did the unthinkable," Erland muttered. "Disobeyed Thor's call and your orders, my lord. Tried to stand against us. He was shouting nonsense, wild accusations, a madman's babble. We had no choice but to take him down, the three of us. He endangered the mission."
Avon kept his gaze on the wall. He counted the stones up to 20 and started again, trying not to hear the anguish in Erland's voice. To jeopardize the mission was the worst offense a warrior could commit, almost the worst.
"Thank you," Somerled said. "You can sit down now."
He lifted his hands wide, turning to encompass the entire crowd assembled there with his gesture.
"What could one do? What could one think? There was a woman in it, of course. Who but Angus's own niece, the witch whom we burned with her uncle that morning? I saw the fury in the wolfskin's eyes when he heard of her demise. It was clear to me he had been seduced by this girl's sorcery. Avon's always been a little naive where the ladies are concerned. There was a whore back home in Freyrsfjord. Half the men of the settlement had been through her, but our friend here still bristled with righteous anger if one made the slightest reference to the lady's... generosity."
Laughter rippled around the room. Avon clenched his teeth. "He's trying to wrestle you," he told himself. "Stay calm."
"Avon gave the slattern flowers and words of love. The rest of us gave her no more and no less than she expected," Somerled said dryly.
Avon closed his eyes a moment.
"Signa never lay with you. She would have told me." "This is a simple sort of fellow. One you want beside you in the field, for he is, was, renowned for his courage and his skill in arms. He's not a man you'd send on an errand requiring wit or diplomacy. In many ways, this great warrior is like a child, easily pleased, easily led. He was like unformed clay in the hands of these people. It took but the space of a season for them to confuse and corrupt him. He returned to us damaged beyond repair. My friends, this man you see before you can no longer tell right from wrong, friend from foe. I tried to reason with him. I tried to help him. Eivind would have none of it. He seems fixed in this skewed vision. And alas, in such a state, he is a danger to us and to all our endeavors. A man strong as an ox and addled in his wits cannot be let loose in a small, contained realm such as this. And who would bear him across the sea as an exile? One does not undertake a long ocean voyage with a dangerous madman on board. I weep to say it, but I see only one answer here.
There was silence, a silence that drew out as Somerled folded his arms and gazed at Eivind a while. Then slowly, as if himself stepping toward an executioner's axe, walked to resume his seat among the arbiters. Not one man present uttered so much as a whisper. Eivind drew a deep breath. He gripped his hands together before him, lest they begin to shake.
"May I speak now?"
he asked as steadily as he could. There was a stir at the side of the hall, near the doorway.
"I have a question first."
It was a rough voice, Grimm's, loud with nervousness.
"You speak out of turn."
Somerled's tone was chill.
"The accused man is next. Questions later." "In the thing, at home, a man has his kin to support him. This isn't right. Where's his brother? Eirik should—" "Enough."
This time the voice was a lash.
"Do you accuse me of being inequitable in my treatment? You, a wolfskin. What do you know of the law?"
Somerled turned to the man by his side, Harald Silvertongue, who had been Ulf's law speaker.
"You explain," he said sharply.
Harald rose slowly to his feet. His hands were restless, nervously plucking at the fabric of his long robe, twisting and twining together.
"Eirik Halvardsson was sent for some time ago," he said. "As you see, he hasn't made an appearance. If an accused man's brother does not come to his aid, that says something about the nature of the offence, does it not?"
"Where is Lady Margaret?"
Eivind asked suddenly.
"Should she not be present here, as the widow of our former chieftain?"
Somerled raised his brows.
"We're dealing with a matter between king and subject here," he said coolly. "This has nothing to do with Margaret. Besides, she's away from the settlement."
"What I have to say has everything to do with her," Eivind said.
"We should wait for her and for my brother. Back home in Rogaland, a man has time to prepare his case, to gather his support."
He faltered to a stop, seeing the hard finality in Somerled's eyes.
"We're no longer in Rogaland," the king said. "And you're wasting time, your own time. Speak up. What explanation can you offer for your bizarre acts of treachery? Or do you tell us it was some other man who stood up there on the causeway and swung his axe against his own comrades?"
The moment had come, and there was no help at all. Even Grimm had been cowed to silence.
"No, my lord."
Good. His voice was steady. A pity about the hands and the thumping heart.
"The charges as you lay them are true, in terms of fact. I did stand against your forces, and I do not regret it. Your actions at the Whaleback were wrong, deeply wrong."
He felt the shudder that ran through the hall. He had just signed his own death warrant.
"I trust only that tonight I may give you an account of my reasons, an insight into what you call a great victory."
He tried the trick Somerled had used, turning so that every man present might meet his eyes for a moment, read his expression. It was awkward. The iron shackles that hobbled his ankles were but a handspan apart, joined by a heavy chain that clanked as he moved.
Do I seem crazed or wild? I am as sane as I ever was. Saner, maybe. For now I see truth where once I hid from it. That was no victory, but a cruel and barbarous massacre, and the man who led it holds kingship here on the flimsiest of grounds. He sent you into attack on a day when your adversary held mourning rites for close kin. That breached the rules of right engagement. Any leader worth his salt knows that. Yet not one of you dared challenge his decision.
It's not I who am on trial here, someone had said quietly.
The men beside him murmured agreement.
Get on with it, said Harald Silvertongue testily. We're not interested in the pros and cons of the battle, only your part in it. Right engagement and so on is all very well when you're facing an enemy of your own kind, the Danes, for instance. With primitive tribes like this one here, such niceties are inappropriate.
Have you forgotten the treaty sworn on both ring and stone?
Eivind asked.
Ulf made peace with these folk, a pact solemn and binding. Do you clasp hands one day in promise of amity, and the next day stick a knife in your ally's back?
You're a fine one to speak of promises, Somerled said evenly.
Did you and I not swear an oath of loyalty in blood? Yet you sought to undermine my great endeavor. Even now you stand in my hall and accuse me of some kind of double dealing. And you have broken another, deeper oath, your oath to Thor. That show of defiance at the whaleback, that brief display of dazzling strength, it was all an illusion, wasn't it? Thor has lost patience with you. He has abandoned his favorite son. You just can't fight anymore.
He gazed about the room, eyes bright.
War fetter, my friends, the malady men dare not name. It has clutched even at our brightest and most dauntless warrior. What other reason could there be for his flight after the Battle of Ramsbeck?
A great weariness descended on Eivind. He was aware of the trembling in his hands, the ache in his knees, the haziness in his head. Sounds seemed to come and go in waves. This would not do at all. He had barely begun to tell them. His hand came up to touch the place where Nessa's small token still lay beneath his tunic, next to his skin.
I acted as I did to preserve the treaty, he said, finding the strength somewhere to make his voice steady. The folk of the islands treated us with generosity. We repaid them with death. If that is what it means to be a warrior, then perhaps it is a blessing I can no longer wield the axe as once I did. I know one thing. I cannot follow a chieftain who has his own brother's blood on his hands.
What?
Harald Silvertongue had risen to his feet again, and so had Olaf Sveinsson on the king's other side. The hall buzzed with shocked voices. Somerled himself sat tranquil as ever.
The fellow's crazy, Ulf exploded. This is dangerous nonsense.
Indeed, put in Harald. Let us hear no more of this rubbish. If Eivind Halvardsson can't keep to the point, his account of himself is not worth listening to.
Not at all, said Somerled gently. When a man faces a sentence of death, we must at least give him a hearing, however distasteful his manner of expression. Far be it from me to gag his arguments as soon as they seem to touch too closely on my own actions. Do go on, Eivind. I never thought to hear you putting forth a legal case, old friend. This is truly a novel experience.
There were a few chuckles, but the prevailing mood was as somber as the look in Somerled's eyes. For all the king's banter, it was clear to Eivind that he understood this was a fight to the death.
I make no apology for my manner of speaking, Eivind said. Like Erland, I'm a fighter, not a courtier. I'm here to tell the truth, that's all. To be heard before you decide my fate. I stand by what I've said. As Somerled told you, I'm a simple man. I cannot spin magic with my words to change men's minds for them and make them see black as white, or white black. I wish to speak of a day on High Island, a day when our good chieftain Ulf was slain in accordance with the foretelling, and his brother took his place as leader. Will you hear me?
There was a frozen silence.